This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. The Golden Globe nominations were announced earlier today, with usual suspects like Meryl Streep and George Clooney making the grade, along with some newcomers, Rooney Mara, who, and Ryan Gosling getting nods for acting. Award nominations generally do have some surprises for Hollywood, but the industry doesn't always heed the message. So as we approach the 2011 Best of the Year extravaganza, Word of Mouth is asking two of our favorite movie critics to review some of the things Hollywood has learned, for better or worse. Amy Diaz is with us, the editor of the Hippo Press. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And our film consultant and commentator, Garen Daly, also with us. Hi, Garen.
Hi, Virginia.
All right, step it up there, Garen. We got a lot to cover. We definitely want to get to the Golden Globe nominations. Any big surprises there?
Well, I think all the surprises were, and they nominated this, why? Ides of March, and then Rango, which I think I maybe saw a different movie from what they saw.
I'm seeing it in a lot of best of lists and thinking,
so
who saw it?
It didn't seem appealing to kids, and it's supposed to be a kids movie.
So, Garen?
Well, you know how much I love the Golden Globe. The all 85 part-time workers in Hollywood who really decide what's going to happen at the Oscars is something that just enthuses me.
Jobs program, really.
Really. I mean, the only two things that I like about the Golden Globes is, one, what's going to happen with the Dick Clark Productions lawsuit and who's going to actually take control of the Golden Globes. And Ricky Gervais is doing it again.
I know.
And that's the only thing that really, I like about
it. Now, I got to say, that was a little bit of a shocker to me. Well, we'll, of course, be talking about some of the Golden Globe nominees as we talk about the films of the year. But it's always much bigger than we're going to pull back and say, what was really going on in Hollywood this year? And, Garen, you told me that 2011 was really a watershed year for Hollywood. Now, we hear this a lot. What really made it this year?
Well, we start off from the beginning. The big thing is that we learned all about BRIC. Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and how they are dominating what's going on in Hollywood. For the first time, is the amount of money earned and the global network of theaters was greater than what was happening in the United States, to the tune of 65% and 70%. Just a couple of years ago, it was 40%. China loves 3D. Russia loves 3D. India loves 3D, and Brazil loves 3D.
America could care less for 3D, it seems. So what's the lesson here? Appealing to foreign moviegoers means financing these mass appeal blockbusters in 3D?
Exactly. You're not going to see as many idiosyncratic independent films like Shame or some of these other great films that we love as filmgoers. You're going to see more and more generic things that appeal to a wider audience. You're not going to see anything controversial. You're not going to see anything that may, disturb somebody in China or in the Muslim countries or even in South America. They're going to be very generic heroes, especially if you think of something like Captain America, which surprised me because there was Captain America, but it was a good generic hero. Wears his cape. Let's now blow up a few things.
Who doesn't love a superhero? Amy, the LA Times did report last weekend's box office was the slowest since September 2008. So kind of a double dip recession for intake at the movies. What's going on here?
I think from a film goer's perspective, I think that all these big movies, particularly the big 3D movies, are kind of off-putting. I think particularly if you've taken a group of kids to the movies, if it's a family movie or even a PG-13, like a superhero movie, the huge price that goes into the 3D alone before you even get to the popcorn or have to have the argument about why you can't have popcorn, I think that's off-putting enough that could keep a lot of people away.
A big decision, but also, this year we had a lot more options. We could watch things online or on demand.
Well, and on demand was, I think, actually one of the great art house theaters of the year. I saw a lot of movies, Melancholia, Margin Call, a couple of good documentaries that I saw, from the comfort of my sofa and paying less.
The biggest take on the dismal weekend last weekend was the ensemble romantic comedy New Year's Eve. Here is Ashton Kutcher making nice with Lea Michele.
You left us on the elevator. I didn't know if it was lucky or something. And also, it's a balance thing. So if you dance while you're singing, you'll need your balance.
Thanks. But you came all the way here to bring me my rubber bracelet.
Sort of. And to say Happy New Year.
Now, I had to cut that audio today, yesterday, and there was a very long pregnant pause where you could focus on Ashton Kutcher's face between the, you came to say, you know, Happy New Year.
Did he emote really well?
He's always emoting, but Amy...
Did he handsome well?
Of course, he's always handsome, and he tweeted about it, I'm sure. Amy, has Hollywood learned that A, the rom-com is a fast track to success, and B, that Ashton Kutcher is the go-to guy for the rom-com?
Jeez, I hope not. You know, he was in one of the weirdest things I've seen in romantic comedy in a while. The exact same movie appeared twice this year. First is No Strings Attached, which was the version he was in.
Natalie Portman.
And now with Natalie Portman. And then there was pretty much the same concept appeared a couple months later as Friends with Benefits with Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis. And that's how much they've run out of movie ideas for romantic comedies. They're actually showing the same movie in the same year. New Year's Eve is really just Valentine's Day, a movie that came out, I think, about a year ago. Little chopped up romantic comedies. And frankly, I'm just kind of sick of seeing these same stories, the same chase to get the guy at the end.
But it was a big year for the rom-com. Garen, Hollywood did learn that boys are no longer going to the movies.
Well, just like we were talking about before, boys are doing things on demand, playing games, going out and doing things other than going to the movies. So a lot of the horror films did poorly. There was this method of making horror films where you make it for less than $20 million. It's going to gross for $40 million, and you're going to make your money back in the first weekend because all the boys are going to go out and see it. All of a sudden, the boys are abandoning the theaters, and since Hollywood is geared towards 25 and under boys, it's no wonder that they're down 20 or 30% this year.
So here come the ladies.
And I guess 40-year-old women don't want to see Saw? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. So ladies really kind of shocked the industry this year, right?
Yeah, but you know what? Think about that. Why is that such a shock? A good, mature, adult movie, and I'm not talking about adult in the pornographic way, but a smart, intelligent movie is going to draw people. They want to go to the movies. And this is an audience that grew up on the movies. So the female 25 and older demographic was going out and seeing The Help in droves, and everyone was surprised. They were going out to see Bridesmaids in droves, and everyone was surprised, and it's like, really? You guys just learned this now?
We have a car. We have money. Yeah. We can go to the theater.
You can vote?
Yeah.
Women, we've come so far. So glad you mentioned Bridesmaids, though. Now, here's Kristen Wiig in a fit of envy. Now, she has been nominated for a Golden Globe for, I guess, Best Actress in a Comedy. She's acting out here with a giant cookie in a chocolate fountain at a very, very posh bridal shower.
Stupid cookie! Delicious! What a delicious stupid cookie! I think I'll dip it in that chocolate fountain. Ugh! Nothing says friendship like 10 gallons of hot, unsanitary chocolate.
So, Amy, I guess this works with your theory that you presented to me earlier. Swearing makes a good movie.
Yeah, swearing makes everything better. Swearing is a slice of cheese that you put over something that melts and makes it all better. But you know, this was a really strong movie. It did have its body side. But it also was a great movie about women friendships and had just a lot of really smart comedy.
Well, everybody's going to be really glad to know that you're our go-to person for family movies since you think swearing makes them a lot better.
Yes.
I can't wait for the R-rated Winnie the Pooh then.
You know, there were a lot of really great family movies, though, this year, particularly this fall. You know, Arthur Christmas, which was nominated for a Golden Globe, also The Muppets and Hugo. The Muppets in particular, I thought, was brilliant because it's Muppety enough for the kids, but then all of us, you know, sort of middle-aged people that grew up on The Muppets are going to love the movie as well.
But that's a key thing for a film to be successful as a kid's film is actually an adult film that kids like. The adults have to like it first because then they'll bring the kids there many, many times.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's something that's forgotten a lot of the times. And then you end up with this movie that kind of entertains no one. Rango.
Well, but buzz on Rango. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a short break and continue our conversation with Word of Mouth's movie posse of two. Amy Diaz and Garen Daly are with us. Now, as we go out, we're listening to Duke Ellington's Sophisticated Lady. This is a song featured on the soundtrack of another delightful summer release, Midnight in Paris. Director Woody Allen nominated today for Best Director, the Best Film, Comedy, or Musical, and Best Screenplay, along with Owen Wilson as Best Actor. We're going to continue talking about the year in movies after a short break. This is Word of Mouth from NHPR.
They say into your early life romance came And in this heart of yours burned a flame, a flame.
We're back with Word of Mouth, and in the studio today, Hippo Press Editor Amy Diaz, definitely not a press, I'm going to say, and film critic and consultant Garen Daly. We're looking back at the films of 2011 and some of the lessons learned by and from Hollywood this year, whether they wanted to teach them or not. Let's get back to The Help, which was kind of a sleeper hit of the year. Here's a clip with Octavia Spencer as Minnie showing one side for the mistress of the house and then the unvarnished side with Viola Davis as Abilene in the kitchen.
Oh, Minnie, will you see if Abilene has some of that ambrosia?
Hold on, those are Miss Hilly's.
She looked like the winning horse at the Kentucky Derby.
All them flowers and bows.
Forgive me, Lord, but I'm going to have to kill that woman, Abilene. Now she going to put pencil marks on the toilet paper.
Well, Garen, what's the Hollywood lesson here? We learned women can go see movies. Yes, strong ensemble actresses can get together and make a hit.
And it also shows that, blacks can lead a film, and that's really good. The fact of the matter is that The Help is a really strong film that surprised Hollywood with what it had with its legs. It just kept building and building and building and building. And again, we go back to that 25 and older female demographic doing so well. But, you know, when you step back and you take a look at The Help and you take a look at what Hollywood has done with a movie about black and race relations, there are some disturbing things in that film as far as I'm concerned. The first one is you have a young white girl who leads the way to be able to help all these poor black people. That's kind of patronizing. And then you think, why did the audiences like it so much? And the reason I think that they liked it so much is that there's distance there. It's 50 years ago. It's almost quaint. And we're not like that anymore, so it's easy to be comfortable with the fact that you're talking about race relationships. Imagine if that was a film in 2011 about 2011 race relationships, and we would not be seeing the grosses. We would not be talking about it this time. So there's some disturbing issues that I find with The Help. I think it's great that we have the conversation now, but I also think that we should look at it a little more clearly about what it's really saying to us.
And it came from a terrific and popular book.
Yes, and it's one of those movies that you've seen. It seems like we've had one every sort of late summer, every August, where we have a book that appeals to women that is turned into a movie and that has legs, again, sort of proving that we do, in fact, get in our cars and go buy movie tickets. You know, I also think that the parts of The Help which really worked for me, which was Viola Davis's performance and Octavia Spencer, I think that those point to, some of what can be great performances that you see on TV, maybe, where you get these really sort of complex female performances. And I think that audiences are hungry for that. They get that on TV. They don't get it in the movies as much. And when they see it in the movies, they'll go and watch that movie, maybe even twice.
This is part of another theory of yours, Amy, that TV is actually leading movies in some way. And I noticed you mentioned, of course, there are a lot of great movies for families, but a lot of movies about families this year. The Descendants is one, the new George Clooney film, The Beginners on a number of bestseller lists. Shame. What's going on here?
You know, I think that we are getting used to seeing these family stories play out on television. And so when we see them in the movies, it's something that you're willing to go check out. Now, maybe not everyone, maybe not boys under 25. But, you know, the movie that you said that you couldn't probably make is a movie about, you know, modern day race relations. I think you could make a great TV show that everybody would watch that's about that. So TV really sort of shows us that those stories are interesting.
And your thoughts on the family dynamics here?
I think it might have something to do with our economic situation. I think that as we have been forced not to spend money by going out and being entertained, which is why the industry is suffering somewhat, I think that people are looking closer to their family units, and we like to see those things that we are comfortable with on the screen, even if it is a dysfunctional situation. So I think that we're looking at our families, and then we're looking at other families on the screen.
Let's talk about shame for a few reasons, one of which is that anything for me that has to do with Michael Fassbender is actually okay. This film was directed by Steve McQueen, not the actor, obviously.
He's dead.
Carey Mulligan also in it, Fassbender in it. Now, he starred in X-Men this year, was a terrific Rochester in Jane Eyre. He was Carl Jung in A Dangerous Method, a great year for him. But here he is talking about his character, Brandon. This is a sex addict, and his sister, played by Carey Mulligan, who, as has been noted, was not nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
You have these characters, you've got Sissy and you've got Brandon, and both of them have come from a history that is never explained in the script, but we've always thought that there was something in their childhood that has happened, and that both of their ways are very different in terms of dealing with that. She's a very explosive character, and he's essentially imploding. He is sort of, you know, seeking these sort of sexual encounters and following through with them as a way to sort of numb away any sort of emotional content.
Fassbender is, by all accounts, terrific and abundant in the film. But reviews for it may have been a little bit tepid. You know, maybe it's a bit of a downer, though. Terrific acting by Mulligan and Fassbender. Now, I'm seeing a trend here of fantastic actors, great performances in pedestrian movies. Anything here?
I think you've got something there. And I think part of the problem is we are not developing good directors. We are developing great actors because they are really practicing their craft. But when you look at the studios don't want to have good directors because they are going to be challenging the studios, and the studios are more interested in making the money. It's the art versus commerce side of things all the time. Take a look at how many young directors are being given reins of multi-million dollar productions, and yet someone like Steve McQueen, which I think he did a good job directing it, is not given that much money to be able to do a quality or to do a big film. So the smaller films are being done by really good directors. The bigger films are being done by these inexperienced directors.
Any other examples here? I'm thinking Michelle Williams in My Week with Marilyn.
Right,
terrific actress.
Boy, there's lots of them if I can just think of them right.
I would say Viola Davis in The Help sort of fits in that category of a really great performance. And as you know, as Garen was pointing out, kind of a okay movie.
Okay, I'm thinking of Leonardo DiCaprio and J. Edgar, you know, great performance, not such a great film.
I think it's an okay performance. The problem with that, I think that J. Edgar is a minor Clint Eastwood film. And I think that I know this. When I was watching the film and I was seeing Leonardo DiCaprio and the old man makeup, I'm thinking, why didn't they just hire Philip Seymour Hoffman? Because he would have been so much better, and you could have saved all that money on the makeup. And I'm thinking of that while I'm watching the movie. So if I'm thinking that watching the movie, there's something wrong there.
Well, now, we thought that might have been a Hollywood lesson for today. Make a biopic with a great actor, and you'll likely get an Academy Award. But we did not see Michelle Williams nominated. Well, she's actually nominated for Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy, and Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, here is Michelle Williams talking about playing Marilyn. Just a nice little clip here.
I thought that it read beautifully. First of all, I didn't know Colin Clark or hadn't read his books or anything. But I thought that the script had a pace and a flow and a heart, and her. I just responded to her.
Yeah, you can hear that little catch in her throat. Playing a legend. We all have a picture of Marilyn in our head.
And it was a fascinating performance. You know, I don't know how I felt about the movie overall, but the performance was it was really fascinating to watch. And then the same is true of, Brad Pitt in Moneyball, Albert Brooks in Drive. It was so the opposite of every Albert Brooks performance that you've seen in most movies. And for that reason, I think really stood out in a not so great movie.
What I like here is when you take a look at Carey Mulligan in Shame, and you look at Michelle Williams in My Week with Marilyn, and you talk about Albert Brooks, when you look at these really good roles, it's because the actors were courageous. They went and did something that really kind of stretched who they were as an actor. And we're seeing the actors do that, but we're not seeing the directors doing that. To kind of answered some of that, that question from before. I love that when I go into a movie and I see an actor really just pushing out the limits and really doing a good job.
And that's, exactly what Charlize Theron did with Young Adult.
Oh, yeah, which we both love.
It was such a great movie. And she is completely unlikable in this movie. She is the worst instinct of every, 16-year-old mean girl. And she plays right into that. And I think got a Golden Globe nomination for it and totally deserves it, because it was just she just completely threw herself at that role and was happy being super unappealing.
Any other female performances that stand out for you this year? Even those that you are curious about seeing, because, of course, a lot of these big movies have not hit here yet.
Yes, no, I haven't seen Meryl Streep in Iron Lady yet. But
which we can almost, guarantee.
I think they reserve a slot for her in, every Oscar nomination pool. So I'm definitely interested in that. And then, I would say I haven't seen Shame, but I liked Michael Fassbender Runner and everything I've seen him in this year.
And then there's Glenn Close and Albert Nobbs.
Which, you know, that one's really interesting because I think that's going to be one that's going to hit really late in a lot of places into January.
Right.
So I'm interested in seeing what that performance looks like as well.
And Rooney Mara in The Girl and the Dragon Tattoo, very hotly anticipated
and
film.
You're right. Who is she? She's the girl who told off Mark Zuckerberg as played by Jesse Eisenberg at the beginning of The Social Network, and that's the only thing she's really known for. So it'll be interesting to see how she does in this movie.
I went to note today on Twitter when the Golden Globes came out, you know, for Best Actor, the question was, are you sure it's Best Actor and not Sexiest Man Alive? We have Michael Fassbender, George Clooney, Leonardo DiCaprio, Ryan Gosling, and Brad Pitt. Who was missing? Gary Oldman, I'm thinking, maybe.
Well, Tinker Taylor. Tinker Taylor is, again, one of those films that's coming out late.
Yeah.
Hasn't been seen by a lot of people, but the buzz is enormous.
And it has a lot of really great actors in it. Colin Firth and a couple of others. So I'd be interested to see how that one is.
All right, this is the time of year when smarter, more art house films are released, catching this Oscar voting audience. Now, we talked about Shame. Then there's The Artist. Let's listen to a scene from The Artist. That was a little joke. It's a silent movie. It does have a musical score, of course, that's very, very good. But
and it actually does have one line at the end.
Really?
Yes.
All right, don't give it away.
But I'm not going to give
you
it away.
You did talk to the director, whose name I'm not even going to try and pronounce.
Which is very difficult. His name is Michel Hazanavicius.
Okay, what did he tell you about the film?
He told me, I mean, one of the things is that he just loves films to begin with. And when you watch the film, you'll start noticing that there are scenes that are really remind you of other films. And he's very honest about it. He lifted it up. Now, I don't know if anyone remembers the scene in Citizen Kane where Kane is sitting with his wife and they're at breakfast and they go, you know, he's reading a paper, then she's reading another paper,
right.
And they keep going back and forth. And the going back and forth shows their separation. He just lifted that entire scene and just changed the people. He's very proud of the fact that he was lifting scenes. And in fact, the closing music is the closing music for Vertigo.
Oh, no kidding. Well, we just heard a little flash of the music from The Artist. I need to ask you before we close, movies you're really looking forward to seeing or the must-see of the year?
Well, the one that you and I talked about when we were doing our pre-interview is Attack the Block, which I thought was just one of the funniest.
Loved it.
It was like it came out of nowhere, a little British horror sci-fi film that is just charming as all heck.
How about you?
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to The Artist, to Iron Lady, and sort of all these movies that there's a big glum. In the next week, it seems like all the movies that everyone's talking about are released. So kind of everything on the Golden Globe list that didn't come out before now, I'm looking to see it in the next month, hopefully.
Well, Garen and Amy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Always so fun to talk to you. Amy Diaz, editor of the Hippo Press. Garen Daly, film critic and consultant. Now, we will have a link to his website for more, but you'll have to wait for Amy's Wrap of the Year's films. It hits the Hippo on the 29th. We'll leave you with Trent Reznor. You know, he's covering Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song, and this is from the Golden Globe-nominated score from The Girl in the Dragon Tattoo, a movie I am particularly curious about. We'd love to hear your picks, too. You can post them at wordofmouthradio.org or Facebook and Twitter. So that's all we have time for today. You can listen to highlights from the week at the Saturday edition of Wait, Don't Tell Me. That's of Word of Mouth. And I'm Virginia Prescott. From all of us here at Word of Mouth, have a terrific weekend. Go see a movie. And join us again Monday at noon and again at 9 p.m. on NHPR.